the headlines, at least two explosions rock Ukraine's port city of Odessa. Ukrainian official blame Russia for the attack. Iraq files a complaint to the U.S. Security Council demanding an emergency meeting over a deadly artillery attack in northern Iraq blamed on Turkey. Plus, Israeli forces injure dozens of Palestinians during a raid in the neighborhood in Eretz Al-Quds. Welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisoum Shahmadi, and these are top stories this hour. Kiev says Russia has launched a missile attack on the port city of Odessa. Ukrainian authorities say cruise missiles were used in the attack on a key Black Sea terminal. Two of the missiles reportedly hit port infrastructure facilities, while the other two were shot down by air defense forces. The latest development comes less than 24 hours after Russia and Ukraine signed a separate but identical accord with the UN and Turkey on reopening Ukrainian Black Sea ports for grain exports. Ukrainian Foreign Ministry has described the Odessa attack as a spit in the face of the UN Secretary General and the Turkish President. It says Moscow will be responsible for any food crisis if the agreement fails. The U.S. ambassador to Kiev has called the attack outrageous and accused Russia of weaponizing food. The Kremlin has not commented on the incident. Ever since the war in Ukraine started, we have been closely following the developments there and keeping you up to date. Central to that effort has been our correspondent on the ground, Johnny Miller. Reporting from a war-torn country was already going to present its own challenges and risks, but Johnny now says that he has been placed on a kill list of ultra-nationalist groups in Ukraine. This after he reported on a story about a kill list associated with the Ukrainian government promoting violence against pro-Russia children in Donbass. A number of journalists have been killed in Ukraine after being put on that list.
This is the notorious Ukrainian website Mirotvorets, meaning peacemaker. It publishes the names and addresses of those it deems to be enemies of Ukraine. The opening page shows pictures of dead Russian soldiers. On the list are domestic and foreign journalists, politicians and citizens that in some way they view to have aided or worked with pro-Russian forces in the country. Now, shamefully, they are adding children to the list. This is Faina Sevenkova. She is 13 years old and has been writing about her experiences here in Donbass. After her name appeared on the list, she started to receive threats of physical violence online.
Are you worried about being on the website? Are you concerned that something might happen to you?
Yes, of course. A person I knew got to know my address and came to greet me for my birthday. These are good intentions, but something worse can happen. Websites like this shouldn't exist. They're illegal. They put many people in danger, children as well. I have a friend who was put on there because she wrote a poem about war.
Numerous journalists and public figures have been murdered after being put on the list, like Oles Bazina, who was shot near his home in Kiev, and Andrea Riccelli, an Italian journalist. After he is killed on the front line, the website posted liquidated over his photo. The Committee to Protect Journalists has previously written to the Ukrainian government asking them to condemn the unfounded and damaging allegations published on Mirotvorets and to clarify publicly that the Ukrainian Interior Ministry is dedicated to protecting journalists. The United Nations and Human Rights Watch have also condemned the site. This is Yanis Bitkonen, a Finnish journalist in Donbass. He's also on the list.
It's all against all international laws, and you shouldn't have right, any country shouldn't have a right to do that kind of like hunting list, kill lists of people and put it to the public, especially. It's a very brutal way how to cause people serious problems, and many have lost their lives because of being on that list.
The website clearly states it provides information for law enforcement authorities and special services. Ukrainian government ministers have praised the site, and it is actively used by the authorities to track and detain enemies of the state.
While Western media and governments try to whitewash the extremist or far-right neo-Nazi elements here in Ukraine, calling it Russian propaganda, for a website promoted, supported and used by the government that openly encourages violence towards children is a clear indication that Ukraine does have a serious problem with state-sponsored extremism.
They're basically encouraging people to kill people on the list?
Yeah. They basically, that's why I've been in since 2015. I certainly cannot fall to the Ukrainian hands because I am on that list with several pages even. So, like the old saying is that the other's one's terrorist is another other one's freedom fighter. And hopefully all sense and truth and peace-loving people understand that all these people in that list are heroes.
To openly encourage violence towards children takes a special kind of evil, an evil that NATO countries, as they continue to pump Ukraine with money, weapons and political support, seem unwilling or incapable to challenge. Johnny Miller, Donbass.
Yanis Putkunin is another journalist who has been on the kill list of the Ukrainian neo-Nazis since 2015. He says these people are part of a criminal organization that has been vastly ignored by Ukrainian officials for many years.
The problem is that this civil war is a geopolitical civil war, and it's waged far away from the Ukrainian borders, and the officials have very limited, even in Kiev government or any government in the world, has a very limited influence on what's happening here since 2014, because these Nazi battalions, which are funded by the oligarchs, this whole movement of neo-Nazis in Ukraine, it's a very globalist mafia element. It's an extremist organization like ISIS or any other terrorist organization, and the governments have very limited possibilities to affect them, and this kill list for these battalions is one of the great examples that how weak the governments and officials and international law and institutions are against this kind of criminal organizations. It's absolutely sorry and terrible. And that is exactly what has happened here in Donbas since 2014 and all these years. We haven't had a single day of ceasefire and killing Donbas people, hundreds and thousands of them. And the world community turning their back to Donbas people has been a just unbelievable crime from the world community not to put any attention for these people here.
Iraq's resistance force said the popular mobilization units has staged a military parade to commemorate the 8th anniversary of its formation. The parade was held at a military base in Diyala province, northern Iraq. Prime Minister Mustafa al-Kadhimi, who was also the commander-in-chief of the Iraqi armed forces, was present. Also attending were PMU commanders, as well as a host of military and state officials. Units from the defense and interior ministries, along with the country's anti-terrorism service, took part. The march featured a parade by infantry units, tanks, and other military vehicles. Navid Bahrouz is the head of our political bureau in Baghdad. He earlier joined us to explain about the significance of the PMU's parade and the message that it is sending.
From a military point of view, this parade is very important, and the PMU showed off its military might. Drones were displayed, as well as modern tanks, including T-72 and T-52, plus some other types of missiles and heavy weaponry and radar systems. to anti-intelligence radar systems. This shows that the PMU is increasing its military might day by day. More importantly, in addition to PMU units, forces from other Iraqi intelligence, security sources, as well as other military organizations were present. This shows that all armed forces of Iraq are united in defending the country. And more importantly was the presence of Mustafa al-Kadhimi at the parade, which shows the importance of the PMU, and it is a response to all the accusations leveled against the PMU, because some say that PMU is acting outside the authority of official Iraqi organizations, but this shows that the PMU is working alongside other Iraqi armed forces and intelligence forces and security forces, and is protecting Iraq.
Iraq says it has taken a complaint to the UN Security Council over a Wednesday attack on the northern Iraq, blamed on Turkey. It has asked for an emergency meeting of the council on the issue. The foreign ministry says Baghdad wants Ankara to pull all of its forces out of Iraq. The ministry says Turkey should also formally apologize for its crimes and pay compensations to the families of the victims. In the meantime, Foreign Minister Fuad Hussein says Iraq does not want to provoke tensions in its relations with Turkey. Rather, it seeks to open dialogue with Ankara. 9 people were killed in the shelling of the Kurdish village that the Iraqi government blames on Turkey. Ankara has denied any involvement, saying the attack was committed by terrorist organizations. Iraqi people have held protests against Turkey. Political party Saeb al-Haq has called on the parliament to take measures to hold Turkey accountable for the attack. The group, which also has a military wing, has warned of countering Turkish aggression if legislators fail to take necessary action. Political analyst Mohammed Obaid says Turkey uses security reasons as a pretext to fulfill its ambitions in unstable countries like Iraq or Syria.
We have a similar situation which is being dealt in Syria also. Turkey using the pretext of security concerns in order to invade and create some regional borderlines for the areas that the same is being applied in Turkey. In a nutshell, it is the creation of this chaotic situation in countries, basically by the Americans, by their allies in the region, and then for Turkey to come and harvest the outcome of this in order to fulfill its ambitions in regional territories, and whether in Syria or in Iraq. So, of course, there is an unnatural situation when it comes to the Kurdish issue, which needs to be dealt politically by the Turkey officials in this regard in the first place. Then there won't be such a problem in all these areas. So, once again, it is Turkey using and exploiting the unstable situations in its neighboring countries in order to fulfill its ambitions, which are clear to everybody, whether in Aleppo, whether in northern Iraq, in the oil areas in these countries. So it is not, it's only a pretext which is being used in order to serve these goals.
Scores of Palestinians, including several children, are injured as Israeli forces attack the town of Silwan in occupied Al-Quds. The forces fired live rounds, rubber-coated bullets, and tear gas at the Palestinians protesting against an overnight raid on the town. A local information center says several army jeeps and police vehicles entered the area and soldiers began storming and searching homes. The Israeli forces also abducted Zoher Rajabi, the head of a committee monitoring the regime's violations in Silwan. His son Hamza was abducted too. Israel has intensified raids on Palestinian towns and cities across the occupied West Bank in recent weeks. Dozens of Palestinians have lost their lives and many more have been detained as a result. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kendall, says Israeli soldiers attacked Silwan to help settlers in their raid against Palestinian houses, which they claim belongs to them.
The main aim of the Israeli settlers' raid to Silwan neighborhood in East Al-Quds and mainly to the Batn al-Hawa neighborhood in Silwan, it's because Israeli settlers, settler groups, continue to claim that many of the Palestinian homes there were owned by Israeli settlers years ago, and that they own these homes, regardless to the fact that Palestinians have documents proving that they are the real owners, and if not, they are the real owners. Before 1948, thousands of Palestinians, Palestinian families had purchased them after 1948 from Palestinian other Palestinian families. Now, what happened this night is that groups of Israeli settlers raided Silwan and attacked Palestinians. Of course, Israeli police interfered to protect and make sure the settlers were safe, attacked the Palestinians, fired rubber-coated bullets, as well as heavy tear gas and stun grenades.
The death toll rises to 21 following a flash flood in Iran's southern city of Astapan. Two people have been gone missing, too. The flood has also affected several other cities in the southern province of Fars. Seasonal rains starting from Friday afternoon have raised water levels of local rivers. Footage released on social media show cars caught in the rising water and being carried away as parents try to rescue their children. Rescue operations are underway in a 10-kilometer area along the main river. Iran has endured repeated droughts over the past decade. And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is the text of the speech delivered on June the 28th, 2022, by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the head of the judiciary branch and a number of the top officials and employees of the judiciary. First of all, in those days, the imposed war had created the worst, most difficult situation. The people stood firmly, imams stood firmly, like Mount Damavand, and the caring officials and the revolutionary youth stood firmly. They turned the situation around 180 degrees. They changed continuous defeat in the war into continuous victory. They cleared the Munafiqeen from the streets. They helped the army and the IRGC to become more organized every day. And they returned the country to a normal situation. There is a point to pay attention to in this. When these events took place, whether it was the martyrdom of Shahid Beheshti or in subsequent events, the enemies rejoiced. They were hopeful that the foundations of the revolutionary system were falling apart. But they were frustrated in this hope. They were frustrated that day, and this frustration and disappointment has been repeated for them many times during these four decades.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
At one time, the enemy hoped for something. It hoped for a weakness or for a shortcoming in the system of the Islamic Republic, but they were frustrated in this. This has happened many times. However, the problem of the enemy is that they cannot understand the secret behind their being frustrated. They cannot understand why this happens. What is the reason that the Islamic Republic can get up again from beneath all these pressures, stand firmly and continue on its way? They do not understand this. They have not been able to understand that in this world, apart from political calculations and contingencies, there are other calculations and contingencies too. These are the divine traditions, which I will now describe in brief for you. These traditions are laws or rules. The Almighty God has put rules in the material world. He has rules and laws in the human world. The Holy Quran says, "And the sun runs on a term appointed for it." That is the ordinance of the Mighty, the Knowing. And as for the moon, we have ordained for it stages. The Holy Quran, Surah 36, verses 38 and 39. These are all laws. Neither is it allowed to the sun that it should overtake the moon. The Holy Quran, Surah 36, verse 40. These are current laws, and they are in front of our eyes.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. Guiding me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You've guided me from all.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Africa Today.
For many years, there have been efforts led by the African Union to silence guns in the continent in an attempt to achieve a conflict-free Africa. Now, the embassy of the Islamic Republic of Iran in Nairobi, Kenya, has supported the African Union's endeavors to flush out illegal firearms by holding a cartoon festival. The Iranian ambassador to Kenya, Dr. Jafar Barmaki, speaks here during the conclusion of the festival in Nairobi.
Through this festival, the embassy, in line with the efforts of African Union, has accelerated the two calls to action by assimilating both 2020 and 2021 themes, which has enabled a promotion of African culture and heritage while fast-tracking and silencing the guns in Africa.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a warm welcome to Africa Today, a weekly program that gives you an alternative view of news and events making headlines in Africa. This week's edition is focusing on how the Iranian embassy in Nairobi uniquely contributed to the African Union's Silencing the Guns in Africa agenda by organizing an international cartoon festival. The second segment of our program will be on the ongoing tensions between Rwanda and the mineral-rich Democratic Republic of Congo. We are asking, what is the source of the current tensions in this volatile region? Stay with us till the end of our show.
Cartoons Exhibition, Silencing Guns in Africa. Silencing the Guns in Africa agenda is a flagship initiative of the African Union's Agenda 2063 that aspires to end all wars, conflict, and gender-based violence and to prevent genocide. Speaking at the closing of the 14th Extraordinary Session of the Assembly of Heads of State and Government of the African Union, AU, on silencing the guns, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa said efforts to silence the guns will continue for the next 10 years.
The AU must have a roadmap on practical steps to silence the guns, clearly outlines the outcomes we seek to achieve as a continent. It is therefore appropriate that we reiterate our commitment to extend the master roadmap for the next 10 years, while we also continue to declare September of each year as Africa Amnesty Month.
The Islamic Republic of Iran is a long-standing partner of the African Union, and it is within this framework that the Iranian Embassy in Nairobi last year organized a world cartoon festival on applying arts and culture in silencing the guns in Africa. In collaboration with the Regional Center on Small Arms in the Great Lakes region, the Horn of Africa and bordering states. Now, to discuss more about this festival and its impact, we contacted the Iranian ambassador to Kenya, Dr. Jafar Barmaki. Thanks a lot, sir, for your time today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on an interview.
Now, Mr. Ambassador, what made you join the African Union's initiative of silencing the guns in Africa to achieve a conflict-free Africa to prevent genocide and end wars in the continent?
As you may know, and your audiences, that Africa has a very special place in our foreign policy. And in this regard, we are trying to help Africa to come up with the challenges in the at the moment. And the silencing the gun, as was presented by African Union some years ago, we try to be help in that regard and to send a message around the world, because if you just have that project in Africa, I'm sure it cannot be worked, because we need to send message to the other countries. It is not only Africa who can work on that issue, but they need the other countries to get on board. This is why I try to send this message through cartoon to the other part of the world. And as you may know, some countries trying such kind of situation in Africa to plunder the resources of the African continent. Therefore, it is very important to have peace in this continent to prevent plundering resources by the other countries.
The Embassy of Iran in Nairobi marked the 2021 International Day of Peace by awarding artists who participated and won in the World Cartoon Festival on silencing the guns in Africa. Globally, the winner was Cao Gomes from Brazil.
Hello, everyone. It's a great honor for me to receive this award at this festival. It's a very important and special moment that values my ideas and drums. The choosing theme is very urgent and call for a lot of reflection and political action.
I'd like to ask Ambassador Barmaki to tell us more about the response from local Kenyan an international cartoonist to this cartoon festival.
It was really fantastic because we received lots of cartoons around the world, more than 70 countries. I mean, cartoonists from more than 70 countries sent their artworks to the secretariat of the festival. Not only from the other countries, but also we had lots of cartoons from African countries, although cartoon is not very much developed as in the other countries in Africa. Therefore, but it was very good. Well, we really amazed by the number of the cartoons we received. It was more than 1,000 cartoons.
Now, the Director of Capacity Building and Institutional Development at the Regional Center on Small Arms spoke during the awarding ceremony of winning cartoonists and lauded the Iranian Embassy in Nairobi for this initiative.
Ending conflicts, addressing proliferation, illicit trade, and trafficking of small arms, which are the weapons of choice and are at the core of all conflicts in Africa, is a huge task that needs concerted effort within and outside the region.
Now, what was the response of the African Union or African governments to this cartoon festival that you organized?
Unfortunately, a kind of political approach they got about this cartoon festival. Although I tried to reach African Union, United Nations in Kenya, as you know, we have two specialized agencies, United Nations Environment Program and United Nations Human Settlement Program in Nairobi. The headquarters are here, so they are the only headquarters in developing countries. Therefore, I tried to get them on board and several other organizations. But unfortunately, due to the political approach they've taken, we couldn't have them on board. And although the governments, even the Kenyan governments, were not very helpful in that regard. But since I decided to have this this cartoon festival, to send a message around the world and to keep silencing the gun projects alive, so I did my best, and I think somehow I was successful.
In December of 2020, the African Union decided to extend the Silencing the Guns initiative until 2030. One of the most effective ways of supporting its plan of action can be through cultural festivals such as the Cartoon Festival, organized by the Iranian Embassy in Nairobi. For the African Union initiative to be successful, a wide spectrum of the society needs to be involved.
And any initiative cannot be only on paper. If you are looking to see that kind of initiative to be successful, you need to get as much as possible peoples, organizations, governments to be on board. And in my point of view, it was very good that to send message through cartoons. And I could see when we had the exhibition here, because after the closing of the festival, we hold almost 10 days exhibition in Nairobi. And I could see that many ambassadors who visited the exhibition, they were very excited that how the people around the world think about silencing the guns in Africa.
The language of cartoons is truly universal, and it brings together hearts and minds of people from diverse cultural backgrounds. Now, do you think cartoon festivals like the one you organize can indeed be a medium of bringing cultures together?
As I mentioned, from among the prize winners, you can see that they are from Latin America, and it is far from Africa, but they understand the situation. It shows that they understand each other, and they can bring the culture closer to each other. This is why I'm trying to hold the exhibition of the selected artworks around the world. I had in some month ago, I had in British Columbia, in Canada, the workshop, the exhibition, and nowadays it is held in Brazil, and in Kenya we had, in near future we are going to have in Iran, and I'm still working with my colleagues around the world to hold this exhibition in other countries, and I'm sure it will help.
Thank you, Ambassador Barmaki, for your time. That was the Iranian ambassador to Kenya speaking on the World Cartoon Festival on applying arts and culture in silencing the guns in Africa. Now, as we mentioned earlier in the program, the global winner of the festival's cartoon competition was a Brazilian. Now, following the good response from Brazilian cartoonists, the Iranian embassy in Brazil organized an exhibition of the World Cartoon Festival on Silencing the Guns in Africa at the University of Brasilia. Now, to get a brief insight on this, we contacted Iran's ambassador to Brazil, Dr. Hussein Gharibi. Thanks, Mr. Ambassador, for your time today.
You're most welcome.
Now, what made you think of holding this Silencing the Guns in Africa Cartoon Festival in Brazil?
You know, it was a theme of festival that was held in Africa last year, with our embassy in Kenya organized this event. And a good number of people participated, artists from all over the world participated in this contest. And the winner was a Brazilian, Carl Gomes, from Belo Horizonte, a city in Brazil, was the first winner. So I decided to invite him to the capital, to Brasilia, in order to present to him his award, and also to have the opportunity to put on display all the artwork that we received for the festival. And the best place was the University of Brasilia in this city. It is the biggest university in the capital, and now all artworks are on display.
A leading Cuban cartoonist, famously known as Aris, took the second position globally in the festival. And again from Cuba, Michel Moro Gomez took the third position. Let's listen to their speech here after learning that they were winners.
Hi. First, I want to express my gratitude to the organizers of this event, the Embassy of the Islamic Republic of Iran in Nairobi, Kenya. This World Cartoon Festival, Silencing the Guns in Africa, is a very important issue because we are talking about peace. I'm so happy to know that I am one of the cartoonists who won an award in this festival, and I have African blood in my veins, and it made me feel even happier. Congratulations to the winners and to the organizers. Bye.
Hello, dear friends. My name is Michel Moro Gomez from Cuba. It is my pleasure, this invitation, to share a few words with you. I believe that is a great idea to celebrate a festival with the topic Silence the Guns in Africa, because it is a way to show one of the biggest issues that lash this continent. It was a motivation to me to draw about this topic, to fight by the peace through a creative form and from the art. Thank you very much, and greetings to everybody.
Now, what is the importance of holding such competitions, and how can they act as a catalyst for dialogue and peace among cultures?
I can say that the art is the global language. Through art, people can communicate with each other without interpretation, without usual translation. So this language is very much affected. And I could see, 62 artworks from 15 countries. They had a lot of common elements in them. And the turnout of the university students and other people interested in going and seeing the artworks in the University of Brasilia is really amazing, and it shows how art can affect people, and we can use this language in order to promote peace and peaceful societies.
Thank you very much, Ambassador Gharibi. Now, our next topic is still on issues of conflict, and we shall be discussing the ongoing tensions between Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of Congo. But before we move to our next topic, we shall take a short break. Stay with us.
Rwanda, DRC tensions.
You're listening to Africa Today. Africa Today is an analytical weekly review of political, economic, and social events in Africa, the world's second largest continent. The series is broadcast every week on Saturdays and Sundays by IRIB English Radio.
Democratic Republic of Congo has accused Rwanda of backing the M23 rebels, which Rwanda denies. And this has sparked a diplomatic row between the two neighboring countries. The March 23 movement, famously or infamously known as M23, is a former Tutsi-dominated rebellion that was defeated in 2013 and took up arms again late last year, blaming Kinshasa for not respecting agreements on the demobilization and reintegration of its fighters.
The tensions between Kinshasa and Kigali raised concerns over the possibility of the conflict escalating further in this volatile Great Lakes region. Congolese President Felix Tshisekedi and his Rwandan counterpart, Paul Kagame, have agreed to a de-escalation process between their two countries following bilateral talks to address rising tensions on their mutual border. The two leaders held the talks in Luanda, Angola's capital, at a tripartite summit hosted by Angolan president who was appointed by the African Union to mediate.
The Congolese president expressed hope that the talks will lead to the withdrawal of the M23 rebels.
I really hope and expect this process to bring about an immediate ceasefire and the withdrawal of this M23 group. While obviously waiting for the process to be set in motion, the roadmap that will lead to a process of peace, stability, and confidence.
To discuss the Rwanda DRC tensions, we have contacted Claude Gatabuke, the executive director of the Africa Great Lakes Action Network. Now, what is the source of tensions between Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of Congo?
The source of the tension between Rwanda and the DRC, the very base and bottom of it, is Congo's resource. And Congo is the richest country in the world in terms of natural resources. And what we have is $24 trillion worth of resources. And Rwanda is basically a conduit for multinational companies and foreign countries that are looting the Congo. So the M23 rebellion, to keep it simple for the audience, is actually Rwanda's military invading the Congo.
The Democratic Republic of Congo is potentially one of the richest countries on Earth. This country plays a significant role in the world supply of cobalt, copper, diamond, tin, and gold. The country produces over 70% of globally produced cobalt. These mineral riches have made the DRC a target of regional and trans-regional neo-colonial powers seeking to loot and plunder this Central African country. The government of Rwanda has categorically rejected claims that it backs M23 rebels in the eastern DRC.
There is no presence of Rwandan soldiers in DRC, and from there, there could not be any collaboration with any other force present in the eastern DRC if there is no presence of Rwandan soldiers.
Are foreign or trans-regional powers involved in the recurring conflict between these two countries?
Definitely. Foreign, trans, and trans-regional powers are involved. There is a bunch of mining companies, many of them Canadian, and a bunch of others from various other countries in Europe and around the world, including the U.S., including the U.K., France, Belgium, and others, Australia, that are all involved in the exploitation of Congo and the Congolese people.
Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of Congo have agreed to a de-escalation process following one-day talks between their presidents, mediated by Angola. However, renewed clashes between M23 rebels and DRC forces have led to concern that the truce between Kigali and Kinshasa will not last.
The DRC has accepted a proposal for an East African regional force to be deployed in its east to help control the violence, but only if Rwanda does not take part. Now, do you think this force can restore peace in eastern DRC?
We do not need more military in the Congo. We need justice in the Congo in order for the Congo and the region to actually prosper. So the recommendations in the UN mapping exercise report to set up international tribunals to try the perpetrators of the crimes in the Congo is going to bring about lasting peace. I don't think the force is going to bring lasting peace. I do think that justice is going to bring lasting peace, starting with using the UN mapping exercise report of 2010 as a basis for persecuting the perpetrators of those crimes.
Well, there you have it. The conflict in the DRC does not have a military solution, but rather there should be justice for peace to prevail. I would like to thank our guest, Claude Getebuke, for his incisive analysis today. And that brings us to the end of yet another edition of Africa Today. Goodbye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, everyone. Welcome to Arab English Radio. This is Asma, your humble host for today's episode, and you're hearing me from Q&A on Islamic Belief, where you could get the answers to all your questions. Well, today we have Dr. Karimi, scholar of religious studies, who will help us with the answers. Assalamu alaikum and welcome, Dr. Karimi.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here. In today's episode, we're going to discuss upon the topic of salawat, or we call it as the salutation in this world and the world to come. And Dr. Karimi for sure is going to help us with that.
Sure. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. There are many discussions about the reality of what we call the salawat upon the Prophet, peace be upon him and his family, and his family. I mean, the salawat is upon the Prophet and his family both. And we are highly recommended and asked in the narrations to be away from salawat abtar, which means sending salawat upon the Prophet without sending the salawat upon his progeny, the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wassalam. So the question is not about the reality of salawat, so I'm not going to talk about that. It may need another session to talk about. But one point that is mentioned by one of the contemporary Shia scholars is the fact that you know, in the narrations, we are told that if you want to ask God for a request, you want to supplicate to God, send salawat to the Prophet and his family at the beginning and at the end, and mention your request in between. Because salawat is a prayer. We ask God to send blessings upon Prophet and his
progeny. Beloved ones.
Yeah. And of course, it should be noted that we are not sending salawat. We ask God to send salawat upon the Prophet and his family. So these two prayers will be for sure answered by God. And then God will answer our request, which is mentioned in between. This is mentioned in the narrations.
Just like you wrap your request in a bundle.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, the point mentioned by this scholar is that although we have so many narrations about the fact that if you send salawat upon the Prophet, you will receive all these rewards, or your request will be answered by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But it might be better for us just to send salawat because of the fact that we love the Prophet and his Ahlul Bayt. There is a big difference between, he called it a salawat, which is for earning something, and a salawat out of love. So this scholar, he's encouraging the people. And we have the same notion mentioned in the narrations about all the acts of worship. Imam Ali al-Salam says that some people worship God because of the fact that they fear the hell. Some people act, and this is the worship of the slaves. Some people worship God because of the fact that they are eager to go to paradise. This is the worship of the merchants
and
the traders. And some people just worship God because he deserves to be worshipped. And this is the worship of the free man.
The same form of worship.
Notion has been mentioned by this scholar that it shouldn't be the act of like those traders. We need to send salawat because of the fact that we love the Prophet, peace be upon him, and his family. Now,
generally, salawat is the meaning of it is the blessing that we ask God to bestow on the Prophet. And when he is bestowed by that blessing, then the people who are following him would be blessed as well.
Exactly, that's the point. I mean, God will shower that blessing upon the Prophet and will be included as well. Now, when it comes to the rewards and benefits of salawat, in the narrations, I mean, we are surprised because of the greatness of these rewards and positive consequences. In the most authentic Shia sources, there are chapters including different narrations. We have it in Al-Kafi, we have it in Wasa'il al-Shia, chapters about how to send salawat and the reward for that. In Bahrul Anwar, we have 67 narrations about the virtues for sending salawat. For example, in one narration we read, a person who sends 10 salawat upon the Prophet and his progeny, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and his angel will send 100 salawat upon that person. And if he repeats that for 100 times, then he receives 1,000 salawat from God and his angel. So what is the reason? Again, it is in need of another discussion. What is the secret in salawat that, so many rewards are mentioned for it in the narrations? It's not only in Shia sources. We have similar narrations in Sunni sources as well. For example, in Kanzul Ummal, one of the great Sunni collections of hadith, we have 119 narrations about the concept of salawat. Now, having said that, I quickly share some of the benefits and virtues and rewards mentioned in the narrations of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam about salawat. Imam Ali alayhi salam says that cover your prayers with salawat, as I mentioned, to say salawat before and after each and every prayer. This is mentioned in Nahjul Balagha, the wise saying number 361.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
According to another narration, the Imam says, أَثْقَلُ مَا يُودَعُ فِي الْمِيزَانِ يَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ السَّلَاةُ عَلَى مُحَمَّدٍ وَأَهْلِ بَيْتِهِ. We know that we have the concept of mizan, or the scales, on the Day of Judgment. Again, we are not able to understand the reality of the scale. But anyway, metaphorically speaking, all the deeds are put in that scale to be weighed. Now, the weightiest thing, according to this narration, on the Day of Judgment to be put on the scales is salawat.
So the heaviest one is salawat.
Exactly, according to this narration. Another narration reads, لا يزال الدعاء محجوبا. Your prayers, your supplications are not answered حتى يسلي or يسلى على محمد وآل محمد, unless you send blessings upon the Prophet and his progeny. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says that if a person sends salawat upon the Prophet and his progeny, God will forgive him or her. Of course, some of these, it goes without saying that some of these narrations may include some conditions. It's not only repeating the words. At the end of the day, if we love the Prophet and the Imam of the Ahlul Bayt, and that is why we send the blessing, we stay pious and we follow them in practice as well. Imam Hadi alayhi salam says that through salawat you will receive the mercy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, so do that a lot. Man salla alayya sallallahu alayhi wa malaikatuh. The Holy Prophet says, the one who sends salawat upon me, then God and his angels will send blessings and salawat upon him or her. Imam Rida alayhi salam has a very interesting narration in this regard. مَنْ لَمْ يَقْدِرْ عَلَى مَا يُكَفِّرُ بِهِ ذُنُوبًا. If you have so many sins and you are not able to, ask God to forgive all those sins.
To make up for those
exactly,
sins.
فَلْيُكْثِرْ مِنَ السَّلَاةِ عَلَى مُحَمَّدٍ وَآلِهِ. Then one of the ways for you to get rid of those sins is to
recite salawat
a lot. فَإِنَّهَا تَهْدِمُ الذُّنُوبَ هَدْمًا. Salawat removes all of